All right, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Joyride.
Yeah, man, we got headphones now. Look at
I like this setup. It's a little different.
It's a little different.
Awkward. I don't know what to do with my hands.
I know. So again, we're growing, so we always grow, and now we've tried to professionalize the podcast a little bit more. So Sacred Heart's been great to us. We have this new little studio that we're recording in.
Shout out to Jason.
Yeah, Jason Ebert, where you are.
Looks good in those jeans.
It is a nice Friday, yeah. All right, anyway, so Danny, what are we here to talk about today, buddy?
Today, we are going to dive a little bit into The Alchemist. Love this book. I know we shared a little bit about it in other podcasts, but I want to dive into something really special, kind of working a little bit backwards. This character that we're going to talk about shows up towards, you know, probably the second third of the book.
All right.
Towards the end of the second third. But anyways, it is Fatima or Fatima, who is what our man Santiago calls the woman of the desert.
Yep.
So, you know, in the book, we'll catch you up to speed real quick. Santiago's on his quest to find his personal legend. Has to travel across the deserts to reach the pyramids and finds himself in the middle of some tribal wars. And the caravan that he's on stops at the desert oasis where he meets one of the most beautiful women that he's ever met. I find it interesting that he forgot about the first woman that he found on his journey. It was the daughter of the... What did he do? His role? I forget.
I don't know. Keep talking. Yeah, I will bring it.
He forgot about the first girl, met Fatima at the watering hole. It's based in a Muslim country, so they have some traditions that they can't do, like talking and touching and hugging and kissing and all that stuff they're not supposed to do prior to marriage. But he meets Fatima, and it's really interesting because he falls in love with this young girl or woman kind of on right in the middle of his path. And he has a hard decision to make.
Right.
And, you know, his chat with the alchemist states that a real woman of the desert understands that a man has to go on a journey and that she will be there to support him on that journey and will stay back or do whatever is necessary, essentially, to support that. Yeah. And I find this very, very important in life. I think the two of us are very lucky where we have met our women of the desert. So I want to dive into that and how important it is to have a nice, strong woman. One that doesn't always say yes, but doesn't always say no either, and make sure that we're guided and moving in a good direction. So tell me a little bit about your wife, man.
So again, you know, I agree. Relationships are very important. And, you know, my wife is an incredibly special woman. She's somebody that I met back in Stamford, Connecticut in 2004, 2005. She doesn't remember meeting me prior to that. We did meet in one instance in college. My wife, Marion, is, I knew her brother before I knew her. He was friends with the guys that I was friends with in college. They'd all gone to high school together. And I had met her at a party at the beach in Fairfield once before, but she didn't remember that. So our official first meeting was when she was living at home with her mom and stepdad. And she was out of college. She was teaching. And she discovered that me and three of my friends were all living together in Stamford. And decided that she wanted to, you know, hang with us. And, you know, the rest was kind of history from there. I resisted the relationship early on. I'm one of those people, especially in relationships, we kind of have to beat me over the head sometimes to see, you know, that there is a connection. I think early on it was immaturity, like a little focus too much on myself. And, you know, I was doing my job. I was hanging with everybody. You know, I'm a people pleaser, so I want everybody to be happy. So sometimes I lose sight of the nature of a relationship, but yeah, it was on 05/05/05. We were at, one of our buddies, dad's 60th birthday then, I believe. And, you know, I was outside of O'Neill's pub. She came outside and, you know, she made her move and I realized that she had interest in me. And, you know, the rest is history. You
That's
know,
cool.
Within a year, less than a year, we were already living together in Stamford, and
How long was how long were you guys together until you proposed to her?
It's a good question. Not even 2 years.
Okay.
We were already living together. We'd actually already bought a house in Trumbull at that point. Well, I say
prior to being married.
Prior to being engaged, then married. Yeah. Well, so we got engaged, I believe it was April of 2007.
Yeah, she won't hold this against you.
No, sorry. She won't remember. I'm the one who remembers all the dates, so it's fine.
I get in trouble.
Yeah, April 2007, and we were married in July of 2008.
Very cool.
So, yeah.
And then pregnant with Mia.
So 2009, 2010, she was born. Pretty quick into that. It was planned. It was what we wanted. And, and then, James came about, after a wedding, her brother's wedding.
Cool. So I'm going to give you a quick background on me and Katrina, and then I want to dive into, really what, Fatima's role in The Alchemist and our women, the women in our lives role in what we do. So Trina and I actually met around the third grade. We went to religion school together at St. Andrews in Bridgeport and had a little crush on her. But we went to different schools, so we didn't see much of each other outside of religion school. We worked at the Trumbull Mall together, different stores, but we worked at the mall together. I used to go see her on my lunch break just to say hi. And then I went away to the military. When I came back on leave one time, I wanted to reach out, so I just looked her up in the phone book. I mean, you're going back to like 2003 when they still had phone books and or maybe 2004 and called her and happened to pick up. She wasn't even living at home. And, you know, we didn't really connect then. And then a couple of years later, she reached out to me and we just reconnected. And it was great. Kind of like destiny. It was pretty cool. And then we moved to Arizona together and ended up pregnant with Armando. That was happened really quick. Was not planning that.
Right.
And then came back to Connecticut, bought a house that we didn't even look at. And then like 3 or 4 months later after Armando was born, we were pregnant with Lauren. So it went really quick for us too. But you know, one of the cool parts about The Alchemist and the story that the role that Fatima plays, I think one, it in the story, it's a woman, but I don't think it necessarily has to be a woman,
correct.
Right? Yep. That's the beauty of The Alchemist is that anybody can be any character at any time.
Correct.
And, but Katrina happens to be my Fatima, and I happen to know that Marion is your Fatima as well. So the biggest role that Fatima plays is she essentially gave a blessing to the man that she loved to say like, hey, you need to go out and do this because if you don't go out and do this, you can't be the best version of you for me. Right? That's how I took it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't disagree. I think symbolically she represents just like any other moment in the book where he is potentially faced with job security at, you know, with the crystal merchant. He could stay there if he wanted to. Then the next phase obviously is finding love, you know, like is love going to change the course that you believe your personal legend is pushing you towards?
It was fascinating there in that part because at this point he had become rich. He'd become the counsel to the chief. Yep. He was well respected. He didn't have to leave. He could have had it all. But the alchemist kind of laid it out to him and was like, look, yeah, you're going to have this. And then the omens are going to stop talking to you. And then you're going to resent her and she's going to know that you resent her and your relationship's going to fail essentially anyways. So I find that really fascinating because it feels true.
Yes.
It feels true.
Especially when you found, you know, your Fatima,
right?
You know,
right. And so when Katrina and I were going through it and I decided to start Live Free, had I not had her complete buy-in, I don't know that I would be a happy human.
Correct.
And I think it took a really special person for Katrina to know that we were going to sacrifice some stability within our family financially for me to pursue building Live Free. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about those conversations that you had with Marion it was walking away from teaching.
It's the same thing, essentially. You know, it's the same story, same archetype. It's, you know, this is something that's very important to me. I saw an opportunity at Live Free where I could inject in my personality and who I am to help us grow this to something beyond what I hope anybody who was involved in it prior ever thought it could be.
Yeah.
And that was my goal coming into this. Honestly, I'm not saying the conversations weren't hard, but it was the outcomes that we recognized were going to be the harder point of the conversation versus the, I was like, Maren, I think this is what I'm going to do. I need to do this. And she was like, yes, I support you. You know,
it's amazing.
And we talked initially about the sacrifices that it was going to take to do it. We gave up some stability for it. You know, in the perceived power of a pension plan for a teacher, and then the concept of, you know, steady pay, in incremental gains, and who we had set ourselves up to be. And none of those were elements of the conversation. It was just, I need to do this. And she was like, okay, I think we can make it work. Let's make it work. And we have, you know, and it hasn't been without struggle. Everybody needs to know that, you know, like there's still definitely moments where we're like, oh my God, like, you know, this is really hard. And the thing to remember is that those conversations existed prior to it as well, which is what I respect about the text as well with this. I think, you know, Fatima serves an incredible purpose in the book, in my opinion as well, because she presents a challenge to him where he wants love in that moment, you know? And the thing that's cool is when he leaves her to continue to pursue his personal legend to find the treasure at the end. And again, I always treasure in quotes there. The love hasn't diminished, you know, it's still there. Almost a driving force too. Of course. And I think that's why, in a deeper sense, the concept of the wind in the text the wind represents all of the things that he's experienced, all the mentors that he's had, all of the connections that he's made. And every time that wind blows, it reminds him of all of those things. And I talked about this with you a while back. When he goes to the pyramids and discovers that the treasure is not there, that it truthfully has been, it was all the way back in the beginning, which again is part of the metaphor of the whole idea and the meaning of the text, is that, you know, the journey, the process of going through the life you live is the treasure. That he gets back, finds the treasure, has that epiphanal moment where it's like, this is it. I found what I needed. The wind blows again and he hears Fatima in it. Mm. And it reminds you that his return has happened. This is that concept of the hero's journey. He's in the midst of the return. Now he's called again to go and seek what I believe are the fruits of that treasure. Yeah. A treasure is not a static thing, right? It's dynamic. So
the other part that I find really interesting in all of this is that I know that had I not had Katrina's full support, I couldn't do good work or great work. Could have done good work, but I don't know that I could have done great work. Mm-hmm. Having your partner's full support, knowing it in your core, not just words, but knowing it, that she has my back. She is supportive in the fact Katrina actually walked away from her job as well, where I played the role of Fatima, where it was like, I understand that you want the security that your job had, but there's even more security here because now you're doing something with purpose that you want to show up to every day.
I love that you think like that, because it's really important to recognize all of us. And you said this earlier, that all of us are Fatima at some point. Sure. And I think actually a relationship will fail if you don't serve as Fatima at some point for your partner's journey. And I do think, you know, I'm not saying that there'd be a part two of The Alchemist, but like once he finds Fatima, he may get to her after finding his treasure and realize that she's on a path, that she's searching for something. Amen. And he may have to let her go and do it, you know? And so I'm prepared for that in our lives. It happened to us prior to me coming here when Maren shifted to another district and found another district to become a part of. Sometimes it's when she changes from being a kindergarten teacher to a second grade teacher because they need her to. Now she's on a path again where she needs to spend focus on something else that's other than me. And I think that that's a tremendous relationship when you're allowed to, when you allow the person that you're with to go out and find themselves within the relationship, you know, and having them know that you're in the wind, you know, you're singing that song. And if they're ready to listen to it, like sometimes you're out in the yard and you don't hear the birds singing, but then you finally do, you're there.
It was interesting because the whole concept of being able to go out and pursue what I felt I needed to do with my life. It wasn't that I wanted to, I felt like I needed to, I was compelled to do it.
Called.
And now I actually proactively put, not push her, because that's not the right word to use, but I want to encourage her to go and make sure that she's still going down her path as well. Because I do, you know, a lot of relationships, I'm not saying my relationship is perfect, because it is not. Having a relationship is hard, right? And, you know, stories like that make it simple, but they're not simple. They're challenging. But I find that the most healthy relationships that I found in my life, and not just mine, but others, is that there is that push to achieve more than just what you want to.
Yeah.
Or what you think the other person should be doing. Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it?
Yep. And I think the best relationships you have in your lives, from a young age, I made the observation that it was like, I haven't seen you in a while, but it feels like I saw you yesterday, right? And if there's space and time that exists in your relationship where you're not together and then you come back together and it feels like nothing's changed, then I think that that's the true mark of an authentic relationship, you know? And, I think when you find that in a romantic relationship, it helps you bring some security to the other relationships that you make in your life as well. Sometimes you put a little too much pressure on the other people, but that's what it's all about. So, yeah.
So, we're wrapping up coming up on 17. So my message, try to find your Fatima, be the Fatima, and, find somebody that's going to really encourage you to pursue the things that you need to in life, man. It's a real blessing to have that.
Yeah.
So
I will 100% echo that, and then encourage from my side just to, you know, in the midst of trying to create these relationships, you have to leave a lot of it to the omens and to action. You know, it doesn't just happen overnight. You have to work at it, but sometimes you just have to let things go and see where they lead you.
Amen, brother.
All right.
Good one.
Let's get back to it.
Later.